the movies. It is the general idea that God is at work everywhere. If you have eyes to see and ears to hear, you can hear not just God speaking, but also the cries of humanity, the questions people have, the stories that are resonating in culture and in societies. Engage with what it is that the media, the movies, the TV shows, critically think through them, and not in a way where you're like critiquing them all the time, but in a way where you're engaging with them in a meaningful way. What is it about this that resonates with you? What's true about it? What's false about it? What are the claims of this that are not true? What are the things that are happening? We shouldn't turn our brain off. We shouldn't turn our spirit off. We shouldn't turn God off, ever. How do we begin to attune to stories that move us, why they move us, how we see God at work in the world? So this is a series kind of along those lines.
All right. Well, welcome back. This is the Right Side Up podcast, and we're talking about God at the movies and in media. One of my favorite things, I'm always seeing God and faith and humanity and desire and need and everything through the medium of storytelling, which is what it is that we're talking about really is visual storytelling. And we thought it would be good to go through the best picture nominees of 2023 Oscars.
These are the things that people are saying are the best stories. So I figure this seems like a good place to start, right? This is what people think are the best pictures, are the best stories that are being told through the medium of film and movies. So yeah, it seems like a good place to begin.
Yes. So what one do you want to begin with?
Oh, though, you know what? You have seen a lot more of these than I have, Danielle. Let's start with one that I have seen that we've been kind of gushing over quite a lot, which is Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Ah, you want to start with the one that won.
I guess I do. Yeah. You know what? Well, if people only listen to one, they should listen to the one that wins and then they can decide whether the other ones are worth their time.
Right. Okay. Well, Everywhere, All at Once. Let's start with that. And then we actually have a little bit of a guide that we're going to use just to help focus our thoughts because there's so much to say about all of these things, but we kind of have these like five questions that we're going to use as a way to kind of give us some direction. So hopefully that works out. So first thing, just a synopsis. So the synopsis of Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Well, those of you who have seen Everything Everywhere All at Once will understand it's quite difficult to tie that down. It's a story about a family's love for one another, I'd say. And
I read a review. It said this is an Asian American woman's inability to do her taxes, which if you haven't seen the movie, isn't as funny. But anyway, if you have seen the movie, it's very funny because kind of one of the lines, one of the sort of storylines is this woman trying to get her taxes together as a sole business owner. And she can't quite, she can't fulfill the requirements of the tax revenue services.
And all the amazing things that then spill out of that. And it spills across parallel timelines and parallel universes. And we get to experience this woman's life in different universes and all the good and bad things that come along with that. But a really, I'd say an amazing story. I was really captivated by this one. I do know it's been quite, I'd say divisive. There are some people that really, really loved it. And some people that just, as you say, don't want to get into it. They're like, this is too far removed from everything. This is too out there. One of the things I heard is actually people that like video games have no problem with this movie because they just imagine different levels and different characters and that's fine. But people that don't like video games have a bit of a harder time with it, interestingly.
Well, I really think that, so it is about like a family, like James said, and it is about invitation to think outside of traditional boundaried living and thinking, and then all the perils that come with that and all the oddities. And it is this mashup of genres. The movie refuses to keep to a genre, which is part of, and it's actually part of the movie itself, is this idea that maybe there is a way of living and thinking that is outside of all the boxes. And sort of a refusing to comply with what people say you have to do. Even as movie makers, they're like, nope, we're not doing that. We're going to do what we want to do. So it's very interesting. The first question we want to ask about this movie is, what does this reflect about humanity or life or our culture, good or bad? What is the reflection that we see in this movie? And I think for me, it's a lot about what you just said, James, which is this idea of like, we're living in a time where many of us have been taught to think in a certain way. And really, I would say in contained ways. And we're moving in towards this era that is uncontained and unrestrained. So I'd say it's like boundaryless. And we just see that in all kinds of different ways. But that sense of like, what is happening? I am so overwhelmed. I am so confused. I don't understand, which is kind of half the movie, is like, what is happening? This doesn't make any sense. I don't understand what's happening, is kind of how, what people are living in right now.
Yeah. I think, and at its core, it's a story of, you know, a mother and daughter's, you know, slightly fractured relationship, I suppose, and all the things that can spill out of that. So at its core, it's a kind of, it's a tale as old as time, right? The kind of differences between generations and what was normal to one generation is, you know, very constrained to the next. So we see that, I think, a lot as well, but it then explodes into this kind of wonderful pieces of cinematography and choreography. And yeah, I was so taken by this.
You know, the very thing you said at the beginning too, is like some people really couldn't, like I've talked to people who said that's the worst movie I've ever seen. Like I just couldn't I couldn't watch it. Like they're just like, I couldn't finish the movie.
You don't need those people in your life, Danielle.
I think, and this is part of the second question that we want to help guide us, is what experiences this draw us into and why, good or bad. And I was going to say this about that, is this movie is inviting you into an experience where you must suspend your linear, or you know, your expectations even of what a movie's supposed to be. So in order to even enjoy this movie, like you really can't enter this movie if you're not able to suspend what you think a movie should be. And I think in many ways, the very movie itself is this invitation and this experience that many people can't come to, because they have all these barriers saying like, this makes no sense. This isn't what I thought. Like, this isn't how movies are supposed to be. Like, this movie doesn't know what it is. You know, there's all these, and I'm like, right, that's what you miss. Like the movie demands you to, in order to experience it, it demands that you actually suspend your judgments and expectations on movie in general.
I think we could say, it's the movie that kind of expects a lot of its audience. I read something recently about how a lot of movies, especially ones made for Netflix, actually, which I like Netflix, I have Netflix, is they're movies that are designed that if you're on your phone, you don't miss anything.
Oh, interesting.
Like, and if you think like, I don't know, Red Notice, whatever. I love the actors in that film. I thought it was a garbage nothing film.
Right.
And I was like, oh yeah, you could totally be on your phone and miss nothing here. And I think some of the films we're talking about today, they actually demand your attention. And I kind of appreciate that, actually. They kind of hold the audience in high regard. That's not to say that everyone that didn't enjoy it just wasn't paying attention. But I think it is a film that demands your full attention. And I do like that about it.
Where is the hope for a different future? Or is there one in this film?
I think there's such incredible growth through lots of the characters, actually. We see the mother kind of gradually understand the situation that her daughter's in. I mean, as I say, a tale as old as time, but wonderfully told and told in a different way. And I think opportunities to see bad guys more sympathetically, I suppose. Like, isn't that, do you think that's kind of the core of the movie as well? The kind of the baddie is actually someone we could understand better. And if we understand our enemies better, does that, you know, does that make it easier to love them? Which is, let's face it, kind of the core of what we're into.
Yeah, I think too, there's a whole bunch of different, I think there's a lot of hope in this movie. I think it's a hopefulness about relationships in general, like how, I think it's a hope that we're not stuck. Because I think one of the major tenets of the film is like, this woman has no choices.
Yeah.
She feels absolutely stuck and paralyzed. And like she's, and as a result of feeling so stuck and a lack of choice in her life is a bit miserable and her relationships are taking a beating, and her really just posture even of herself is very like downplayed and very sad.
Which ironically is probably the most relatable experience on earth, given the amount of oppressed people that feel exactly like that.
Yeah. And just whether or not it's her own tradition or her upbringing or this like relationship she chose early on. And when she chose it, she had to, you know, come out of alignment. And then it led to her like running a laundromat, trying to pay the bills. And then the movie kind of opens up this like way of her seeing all the different ways her life could have gone had she made different choices. And then kind of that kind of at the beginning is like, oh, wow, I could have made that. I could have been that. I could have been that. And then there's this kind of curious thing that happens where, and it's kind of hard to explain if you haven't seen the movie, but where the guy that's kind of helping her navigate this space in order to defeat this chaos that's like going to destroy the universe, she's the only version of herself that could do it. And he said the reason that she is so incredibly like the right person at the right time in history is because her life is actually so ordinary, which is also this kind of celebration that that choosing well and in front of you and doing the thing that you can do and using your gifts for the people in front of you, like that ordinariness that many times we would despise in the movies is actually presented as like the way of defeating the chaos that threatens the universe.
Yeah.
And there's something beautiful about that. Just the elevating of actually running a laundromat is a beautiful, beautiful life. And actually loving, like marrying the love of your life and running a laundromat is a beautiful life. And actually having a good relationship with your daughter while running a laundromat with the love of your life is the perfect life. And so it's also that I think that like nonstop eternal longing for what could have been, instead of seeing that where you are right now is a beautiful gift.
I think I'm going to watch this movie again. That's really from this conversation. I just want to watch this movie again. So whether aspects of your faith that kind of informed your viewing there, or the things that jumped out for you, I'm constantly in look for a redemption story. So obviously that's kind of what I saw as they say that like, oh, okay, this person that feels so broken and problematic actually, I know the greatest power in the universe is love, right? Like, I know, I believe that.
So. Yeah, there's a lot of general themes. And there's also like a lot of fun, I think. And I think one of the things that the film does, which I think is one of the things that my faith does, and this is the more I understand about who Jesus is that Jesus offers me a curiosity that suspends judgment, that changes the way I live my life. So, and I feel like this is the opposite of how most people were raised in Christianity or their faith systems or traditions. And this is the opposite in some ways of the way I was raised, in that I think the dominant Christian or faith-based kind of view of life is to view everything through the lens of judgment. So it would be like, again, those people who found it impossible to enter into the story because they're like, this isn't how a movie should be. This doesn't make any sense. I can't, you know? And so our faith construct has been like that. But the more I've gotten to know Jesus, the more I see this person who is like curious. And the curiosity itself leads to like wonder and awe and this ability to suspend judgment so that I could maybe explore what else there is to know. You know, we talked a lot at another, podcast series. I'm like, I wonder what else I was wrong about. Like, you know, that I don't have to be afraid to enter into places I don't understand or afraid to explore who these people are, even people that I think are against me. Like, and I think that's a way that faith can inform our lives. Our lives could be more genre busting. I would like to live a genre busting life. I think it's Mike Frost who said, like, if you're not living a questionable life, you might not know Jesus super well. Cause it should be, should look at your life and go, what? Like, I don't think that's it should be genre busting in so many ways.
Yeah. Okay.
So I thought that was a way my faith was informing me here.
That's an excellent way to approach these things. Okay, I'm impressed. So if we practice in advance, I wouldn't be so amazed. But actually, I'm really into this. So yeah, like you say, what do we then do with that? Does it make you want to do things differently? Does it make you sad? Does it make you want to create? Where does it leave you, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it leaves me a little like bewildered still. Like, I'm still a little bit bewildered about the end. To tell you the truth, I almost need to watch it again and go like, what is
that? Yeah, we should just watch it again, I think.
About, yeah, I think we should. And maybe with the discussion guide that Hannah is making as we speak. So that
shout out to also, Hannah.
We could watch it and then discuss it with some friends. That might be good. I like your, you know, you said it quickly. I like that love is the answer, you know, and that ultimately that relationships are central to this thing. I like the sacredness of the ordinary. Yeah. I like the idea of not regretting choices you never made. I think that can be paralyzing and depressing for your whole life. And I love the idea of you going, I chose this life and it's meaningful and good and sacred and true. So there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of things. I think it causes me to feel sad about the way we've disparaged ordinary life and the amount of people I know who are stuck thinking that they're stuck. And that seem to lack choices and or lack the knowledge that they're making a choice even by living the way they're living. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I think it's also recognizing things. That, I don't know, yeah, you say we get to hold a kind of holy contentness with as also a holy expectation, right? That there's more going on than we realize. I think there's something beautiful in that. So yeah, because you were so ordinary, which I think is... I think any of us would probably receive that as an insult. And yet being ordinary is surprisingly difficult a lot of the time. That doesn't mean I think we should still, you know, tear it all down for Jesus, but there's also like, there's a beauty in there too, isn't there?
I love that. There's more going on than you think too, though, because I think that's, you know, that's Ephesians, isn't it? That like we're fighting not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities and thoughts and systems that would set themselves up against the lordship of Jesus. So I think even that, like the most ordinary thing is actually loaded with all of these different like universal implications.
Yeah.
I think it's important to know that too. You know, not that we're going to be like constantly in a state of paranoia and conspiracy, but that actually there's more going on than we think. And sometimes what seems like a very simple or small thing, like an issue in your relationship, actually has all kinds of implications that affect and are that things behind it that are not just what it appears. And even love as a force, you know, has powerful, like literally cosmic implications, as we saw in the life of Jesus. It wasn't just a guy dying. There was a lot more happening.
All right. So we've used up half of our allotted time on one movie. We knew that
picked the best picture.
So I did. Yeah, that's true. We picked the best one.
Let's quick.
So we're going to rip through some of that. Okay. I haven't seen, I've seen Avatar 1. I haven't seen Avatar 2. Okay. My understanding is they're pretty similar. So,
yeah, I mean, the plot is just kind of renewed in a way.
Sure.
And we, you know,
a place people exploit it. That's again, Taylor's old of time there.
Yeah. And important to keep telling. I think that is important to keep telling. It was such a like, whoa movie when it first came out because it did follow that plot. And then to tell it again in a different way is very interesting. Scully has to keep battling his own people and his own old sense of worldview and his old commander. So that's probably a prophetic invitation for us to go, oh yeah, this is not one battle fought and won. This is a battle that keeps coming back. And we all have to kind of fight differently. So
that's interesting, isn't it? The kind of one of the things with Hollywood is it gives us happy endings and it gives us conclusions and we kind of get to feel bad, feel good about ourselves a lot of the time because, well, the bad guy's been thwarted and everything worked out.
Right.
And of course, in the real world, often that is not the case, that exploited people continue to be exploited and land continues to be exploited and resources continue to be exploited. And so
There's this other subplot that's happening where it's like the tribes are different. And so there's a lot of like, they're being received by the water tribe and they're like the land tribe or the air tribe. I can't remember, but anyway, they're having to be received. And there's a fair bit of like, you know, jostling there. Cause they're not all just one people, they're tribal, different identities, different value. Like, you know, so that's also cool. The complexity of that was interesting. And the other thing I would say is a big feature of Avatar, The Way of Water is the water. It's the water people that are taking them in. Uh-huh. And there's a specific character, one of the sons of Scully, that has a relationship with a whale-like creature. Mm-hmm. And it's a whale-like creature who's actually been injured, survived an attack, and is kind of injured. And people think it's mean-spirited and all this stuff, but they connect. So there's this also big theme in that movie about the connection of created things.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons I think this had to be nominated for an Oscar because of its technical genius. Sure. So my son was telling me this, that like over half the movie was shot underwater, which is astronomically crazily complicated and hard. And it is one of the most beautiful, like it almost felt like I came out of a Nat Geo Wild film.
Okay.
Except that place doesn't exist. So imagine that. Like I felt like I came out of a Nat Geo Wild of Avatar, but Avatar is a thing he made up. So like kudos to James Cameron as the greatest maybe filmmaking artist of all time or something. Like it literally is a world he created and it's beautiful. It's stunningly beautiful.
This is really making you want to watch this movie, Dan. I'm going to say, I wasn't into the idea and now I want to watch it. So good for you.
Yeah. I mean, I was dragged along with my kids. I probably wouldn't have gone either, but I was glad I went in that it was really a beautiful experience. Mm. And the sacredness of the created order and the way that people interacted with that, I think was stunningly beautiful. And what it did was the more you dove into that, like the more you were in that with them, in terms of the, you could feel them come alive. You could feel things alive. You could feel God, I would say the spirit at work in that spot.
Sure.
And then when that was threatened and destroyed, you felt a deeper sense of sort. Like you were like, not that, like he really did a good job at drawing you into the, like the beauty and the sacredness of this life. And then the destruction of it again was like next level. You know, why would you do, like, why would you destroy this thing that is so sacred and beautiful? And so that itself, I think, is a generational cry of like, stop destroying the beautiful sacredness of all created things. Really beautiful. So I think I would, you know, it would be worthy of watching that movie through a lens of like, what is this calling to us, saying to us, asking us and inviting us to be part of?
I think it makes space to listen to stories that are different to our own, and reflecting on the way that we're in Canada. So the way that many Indigenous peoples in Canada view land very differently to the way that we do. Whereas many sort of Western minded folks see the land as something to be exploited. A lot of Indigenous people don't view it that way. Even the idea of just owning land was, so I heard this the other day that when the first colonizers came over and they said, we want to buy this land. They got it for nothing because they're like, you can't own it. Like, that's not how, just the idea. It's like, oh, you're going to own the sky next? Like, what are you going to, like, that's not how it works. So,
and SpaceX is like, yes, we are.
That we actually, yeah. That's, I mean, right. That's the joke now.
We've, it's also like, boundaried the ocean. Good luck with that. Yeah, but all here of we it. Are. Yeah.
So I think making time to reflect and even the kind of sacredness of spaces, that seems like an important thing that is quite lost in our culture too.
Hagar's Voice is a movement and also a podcast that we want to call your attention to, mostly because it's a beautiful emerging movement that seeks to provide strategic support to survivors of clergy sexual abuse, as well as advocacy to change systems that perpetuate that abuse. So we're excited to be part of this Hagar's Voice movement. And as you've been listening to this podcast, hopefully you also will want to do something. So right away, you can begin to listen to Hagar's Voice podcast, which are the stories of survivors of clergy sexual abuse. That posture of listening and learning is easily practiced as you go and listen to survivors to tell their own stories, and you learn from that. Also, if you want to go to hagarsvoice.com, there are ways to support the movement coming, and we would love to have your support and spread the good news that Jesus really is on a mission to liberate. The other thing that's good about that film, which I think answers some of these questions about what does it reflect and what does it draw us into and where's the hope for a different future and how does our faith inform our experiences and what do we do with this now? The other thing that James Cameron does a good job with in this movie is really like at first I was affronted by it. Like the character, the bad guy is just so one dimensional.
Sure.
Yeah. And he's just like the same bad guy, but like with a machine now, like it's like, and you're really? Yeah. And then actually at the end, he lives again and you're just like, for real, this guy lives again. He's going to come back. But I actually, as I thought of it, like, so at the beginning, I was just like, that's so like sad that the bad guy is so one dimensional. And then I was like, or is it just a proper representation of evil?
Yeah.
Like there is nothing creative. Of it,
right? Yeah. There's nothing creative.
There's nothing new about somebody coming saying, I will take by force what I want for
I want
the reason
your thing.
I want.
I'll do whatever creative. I have to.
Nothing beautiful, nothing nuanced, nothing. And I thought, you know, the very thing that I was a little bit like, really, James, like, that's it. You got this like one bad guy that's coming back again. And I was like, actually,
but that's the story. Like that is the story, right?
That's as great as evil gets. Like that's how good wicked is just like, it's the same old, same old, same old.
There's
same
a thing
old.
That you have and I want it. And how my taking it from you affects you doesn't matter. That's like, just feels like, pretty much everything bad in history forever. Right? Yeah. There's
he's
less
like
nuance.
And prejudicial like, and judgmental. And he's like, you know, just coarse and like,
I want your thing.
Beautiful. So. All the bad guys are all in machines. And like the good guys are kind of all part of created order. They're not like, so I there's so many parallels there, but one of the things I thought at the beginning, I didn't like, the more I've thought about the movie, I've liked. And that's that badness and wickedness and evil is actually just always pretty bland.
Yeah.
Nothing creative there. Same old, same old. All right. That's Avatar Way of Water. Yeah, okay. Let's keep going. It was a big year at the Oscars. They nominated kind of everything.
It was. Okay. Let's change pace entirely. We'll talk about Banshees of Inisherin.
Oh, wow.
Which I will say, again, is on my to watch list. I love this director whose name escapes me, McDonald or something, I think. He did In Bruges. It's one of my favorite films. He did Seven Psychopaths. He did Three Billboards. This guy doesn't miss. My understanding is he doesn't miss again with this. But tell me about, because this is a change of pace. It's pretty dark, Danielle. But you did your homework and you watched it.
It's a comedy. It's a dark comedy.
He does dark comedy.
If you don't like
dark
comedy, you probably don't want to watch this. But it's also it's a parable. It's a, what would you call it? A metaphor of. Should I tell? I don't know if I should give away what this is trying to say or not.
I feel, okay, in my mind, the first like half an hour is on. I know people might differ on where, like, so if you tell us the final line, that might be spoiling it, but I don't know.
Well,
how much
knows
can you
plot
share?
Line is that this guy decides
that
he doesn't want his friend to talk to him anymore. And if his friend decides to talk to him because he just doesn't like his company anymore, there's no reason why. He just doesn't want to be with him and he doesn't want to talk to him. It's a small village in Ireland. And the guy talks to him. He said, if you talk to me again, I'm going to cut off my finger. And the guy who says that is cutting off his finger is actually a musician. And what his greatest dream in life is to actually make beautiful music. And so that's what he does, is in a pub, he's making all this beautiful music. And so the friend can't understand, like, he's like, what have I done? Like, I need to talk to you. I need to sort this out. And when he goes to visit the guy again and try to talk to him, he cuts off his finger. And then this, like, so it's sort of like unbelievable. And then it keeps going. So it's a little insane. I want to tell you, I did watch the movie with a couple friends and we did not look up anything about it. We did not, you know anything. We hadn't heard anything. We just watched the movie. And at the end, one of my friends was like, I don't get it. And then I was like, I think it might be about civil war.
Interesting.
I think it's about civil war, especially in Ireland.
Yeah, sure.
Where like two parts of the country, one of them saying, don't talk to us anymore. Or what? Like, what is civil war? Like, if you I'm going to hurt myself. Like, you hurt yourself to try to teach a person a lesson. And then what have you learned? Like, it is a dark comedy. It is, I think it was about sort of civil war and how ridiculous civil war is when you actually break it down to its most basic element.
Yeah. So is that, were you able to be drawn into an experience about God there, Danielle? Is that like, is that possible?
Well, I think the experience it draws us into the movie itself is just an experience of like the wonderment of like people's decisions to cut people off. Like the wonderment of like, I don't know, what is that, separation or, you know, something like that. And I think the other thing that this movie does in terms of like, is there a hope for a different future or even is there one? I think there's a lot of that. Like, do we have to live this way? Is this how we, because it does end, like this is how it ends. It's like a bad, it's not redemptive in the sense that the movie fixes anything.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what it's designed to make you think about. Is this the way you want to live? Is this the way we want to live? Like constantly injuring ourselves to teach other people lessons. And then even like deciding we don't want to be friends with people for no reason. Like it's just so it leaves you baffled on purpose. So I think that's really good.
There's something about holding a mirror to the kind of, yeah, when we're at our most self-destructive. It's like, but it's you, you're hurting. I don't understand like this relationship, you choosing to be this way. Like, it's why are you doing this? And it is ridiculous, right? Like that's the thing. And so maybe that is the point, and maybe the lack of, you know, satisfying conclusion is the point as well. It's like, yeah, because this doesn't end well. Like that's the point, right?
Right. And it's so dumb. The whole thing's so dumb. Like it's and that's part of it too, is like, we do this all the time. Like you think about our faith journey sometimes, or like if you're in a parental relationship and you're like, I'm going to teach my strict parents a lesson by like living a crazy drug fueled rebellious life. And you're like,
you're not speaking from experience here. I take it, Danielle.
Right. And you're like, a way to go. You know, like you wrecked your life. You cut off all your fingers. You know, like how's that going now? You know, and you're just like, yeah, that was great. So I think it is more of a mirror. The movie is a mirror to a culture that just, you know, perpetually tries to get what it wants by harming itself. Like it's bizarre, but. And what do we do with it? I mean, I pray. I mean, I think there's so much faith, spiritual stuff in here, and that we cut ourselves off from God. We hurt ourselves in the name of us getting our own way. I think there's a brokenness of relationship where a lot of people are perplexed by it, including God. Like I could kind of hear in Colin Firth, he does such a good job at this, is like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like I'm so sad. I don't know what to do. And I could kind of hear echoes of God walking through the garden saying like, where are you guys? I could hear a little bit of that. Like, why have you done this? Like, why are you so against our relationship? So much so that you're willing to hurt yourself to prevent this from being a thing, you know, like, so there's a little bit of that I saw in there.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Often when we're in a rough place or something, we then make unhealthy decisions, which then further distance ourselves. But ultimately it's ourselves that we're wounding. Right. So holding a mirror up to the ridiculousness of that, I think that is value in and of itself. Right. You don't to have a kind of tight, neat ending would be to miss the point that how destructive this is. I think so. Is there a beauty there as well? The kind of, yeah, you brought that in. I don't think we certainly don't like to think of God as being vulnerable. I'm trying to think of a better word, but I do quite like it. But God is certainly tender. We see that throughout scripture all the time. We see how much God desires to be close to us and how much it, you know, we hear that. In Genesis 6, when he just sees how bad people are being to one another, the translation is like, God's heart was sad. That's what it says, right? So, being able to kind of reflect on that, like, can you just stop hurting yourselves and one another? Right. And I'll stop being sad. That's a wonderful thing to bring in. I think we need to, and how does that impact the way that we live our relationships with God as well, as one who is actually kind of affected and even hurt by the things that we get wrong, not trying to make people feel guilty. And, you know, if you're out of alignment, there's no judgment here, really. Just knowing that I can make healthy choices that strengthen that relationship, and that's exciting and beautiful. Or I can make unhealthy decisions and recognize that hurts me and hurts God too.
I guess too, the final thing on this one is just simply like the guy that keeps cutting off his own fingers could just stop.
Yeah.
Like the whole film, you're like, you could just stop this. Like, it's madness and unnecessary, and the consequences are dumb. And
it's just such a no-win.
Yeah. So there's a part of me that's just like, watch the film, and if there's anything you're doing that is causing you unnecessary harm for no real good reason, could you please stop? I mean, right away, let's just stop. Yeah, let's do one more real quick. I'm going to pick one that I think.
Okay, one that you can work through quickly. Okay.
Okay, let's do Elvis.
Elvis, okay.
I was surprised it was nominated, to tell you the truth. I mean, it was beautifully shot. And of course, Elvis is one of the greatest characters of all time. But it really it tells the story not just of Elvis. It really is an expose and a telling of the story of Elvis's manager and how Elvis might have got caught in a lot of unhealthy and kind of toxic scenarios because of his manager's greed.
A fairly famously awful, exploitative man. Colonel Sanders. That's okay.
Colonel Bad Guy.
Yeah.
And so that was interesting about how Elvis, in his vulnerability, which is his poverty and kind of some of the things he doesn't know about, gets easily exploited.
Yeah.
By this guy, and then really is kind of lied to and kept hostage. It would seem in the movie, final days are kind of, he was kept hostage in Vegas. And so what this incredible man actually ends up being this like, basically like kind of zoo animal. As a result dies at his own hands, right? Like
he's.
And there's a couple poignant parts in the movie. I would say, what experience does this draw us into? I think it's a little bit of the exploitative thing, but they do actually do quite a good work at Elvis's origin story of being formed by gospel music.
Okay, cool. Yeah. That's interesting.
There's a couple beautiful scenes where Elvis as a kid has an ecstatic kind of Holy Spirit relationship.
Oh, nice.
Like impact at a church.
Yeah.
And then sees in the black community where he lives because he's poor. So he lives with
other poor people.
that really informed his understanding of like breaking out of what would have been white country music into more blues and gospel, which is what he does. And what, you know, really just like makes him different from a lot of other artists. So that was really interesting. I felt like faith-wise, that was where I felt like there was some, you know, his early experience of faith. I think what happened was that ecstatic spiritual experience that happened at a church, he's trying to recreate in a show, which a lot of actually really famous musicians, people will say, I feel something here. I was thinking about this today because there's been a lot of talk on social media and stuff about worship leaders being exploitative and using music to manipulate people. And then there's been all this pushback on a lot of people that I like and follow on Twitter saying, of course it's manipulative. Music is designed to move people. So like, it doesn't mean it's exploitative just because it's moving people.
Like nothing is neutral, right? Like everything is trying to have a result.
And music by design, you know, like literally music is meant to feel. You're meant to feel music. It's what it's designed for. So whether or not you're in, you know, a worship concert in a Christian setting, or whether you're listening to Elvis and you're at an Elvis concert when you're a 16-year-old girl, something's happening in you, right? Like there's a movement. This music is meant to make you feel. So I thought that was interesting because there's a phenomenon to Elvis, the charisma, but also the music itself that people said like was life-changing for them and sort of a generation. We see this with the Beatles and with Elvis and with Michael Jackson. There's all these, and music is a big part of this, like what is happening here? Something transcendent, something is happening inside of people and in these experiences.
I think even recognizing that God is keenly at work in those places, regardless of sometimes God goes where they're not invited. So even if you're at a music show, which isn't explicitly about Jesus or something, that God is still able to work powerfully through that, right? I think, and I started going to like metal and hardcore shows when I was a teenager, and it was just the most amazing, incredible, beautiful, like authentic experience. And then some of my youth group was like, you should come watch Delirious with us, who are a kind of nice, safe Christian band. There's nothing wrong with Delirious. They're fine.
And I liked Delirious a lot.
You're allowed to like Delirious. I'm not saying people can't like Delirious. I'm saying that people that experience, you know, something beautiful and profound at metal shows might not experience it Delirious and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I remember after people like, but can you just feel God present? I'm like, I really didn't. I'm sorry. Like, I'm not trying to be difficult here. Right. And I was like, well, I guess I'm broken because, you know, and later on, I really think God revealed it to me. It's like, no, I just connect with you differently. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, you get to experience God in places different. So, and then even you send the kind of gospel music, which is such a beautiful thing. And then Elvis is like, but I want people to experience what I feel elsewhere as well. I love that. I think, yeah, music is such a powerful thing when I'm writing sermons or whatever. If I really need a kind of jolt, I'll put on some music that I know kind of pumps me up or calms me down. What, you know, as you say, even with the worship music, well, yeah, it's designed to do a thing. And hopefully it does the thing it's designed to do, right?
Well, and what it's designed to do is to awaken your feelings. That's why we say I was moved by that. A lot of music scores, but also the movies themselves use music as a way to help accompany these visual things to make you feel something, which is why we love them.
Yeah.
Because to feel is to be human. And I think that's one of the great problems with some traditions of faith is that they were taught that feelings were things you should shut down. And actually, that's crazy if you read your Bible at all, because it's actually through the heart, you know, it's the heart, it's emotive. Like Jesus was emotional, like emotions are welcome here because we're alive and we feel things. And that when we feel things, we are actually connecting to the God of feeling as well, that God feels things. So there's something beautiful about being moved and then seeing a sacredness in that instead of just being afraid of that.
Yeah.
That I think is very powerful. And I think when we enter into something that moves us with fear, then of course it's going to drive us to terrible places, you know. But if you approach a place where you're moved and you're able to enter into that with a sacred lens of like, what's moving me?
Yeah.
Why am I feeling this way? And then, you know, like you said, where God's like, I made you to different. Like I made you, I connect with you here because, you know, you're probably someone that needs somebody to just say the truth and say it out loud and say it loud and proud and not be ashamed anymore or whatever those things are that happens in metal shows. But there's something there that is like, actually, that's good. Let's do this in a way that is going to be beautiful and good for the world and good for you. So, So cheers for Elvis. I feel bad. The only thing I would say, what do we do with this thing? I think we lament the way that we have forced good things into exploitative places. So I think there's still a lot of things we need to probably figure out and lament about the way industry distorts art.
Yeah.
And hurts people even to this day. So I think there's probably a lot to be done there. And then I would also just say, I pray that we would be people that could move people. We would be a part of, a faith that would be moving. I would love that. It'd be good. Anyway, we're going to carry on because there's a lot of Oscars. So we're going to do a few more in the next episode. But hopefully some of these have been helpful, just recaps, but then also maybe some helpful lenses for you to view some movies, and it might speak to you somehow. And that'd be cool, and that'd be fun. You could meet God at the movies.
Hooray.
Catch you later.